Welcome back, everybody, for the sixth episode of The Bronx Beat. My name is Ryan Garcia, as always joined by New York Daily News beat writer Gary Phillips covering the New York Yankees. Before we get into everything, I do want to thank you guys for the support on last episode. It is the most viewed episode we've had so far on the YouTube, which is awesome. We really appreciate it, guys. In today's episode, we're going to be covering a good range of topics, nothing too in-depth given the lack of noise right now as this Grapefruit League begins tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit about what Gary sat down and wrote about regarding new Yankee reliever Angel Chavichi. That's the new pronunciation. I'm going to definitely mess it up during the podcast. We'll talk about Sarasota because tomorrow the Yankees will be there to open up their Grapefruit League season. We'll talk about Ryan McMahon a little bit. The MLBPA, Tony Clark, resigned, and Austin Wells, the player rep, will discuss some of the stuff that relates to the general baseball conversation about a looming lockout potentially. And we'll touch on Anthony Volpe's rehab and recovery. He spoke to the media earlier this week. Before we get into all that, though, make sure you guys like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell, continue to show the support you have so far. And before we do, I mean, any baseball discourse, Gary, how are you doing, man? How are we feeling?
I'm doing really good. I'm in an auxiliary broadcast booth here at George M. Steinbrenner Field. You can see the Yes Network signage is right behind me. And I also just wanted to echo the thanks and appreciation. Like Ryan said, our last episode was our most viewed to date. So we really appreciate the love and support. Hope it continues to grow. And we're certainly looking forward to doing more podcasts and growing our audience.
Yeah, and while we discuss Yankees topics in the first half of this show, we'll get into a mailbag in the second half. So continue submitting questions on any of the tweets we've put out, any of the posts. We'll have a new tweet and a new post on the YouTube coming out for any mailbags we do next week. So stay on the lookout for that. We really appreciate all the questions we get. But let's get started talking about Angel Chavichi. Now, Gary, you did an article on the New York Daily News regarding the new reliever coming over from the Rockies to the Yankees. Can you talk a little bit about what you learned doing that article and some interesting nuggets on the right-handed reliever?
Yeah, so back when the Yankees acquired Chavichi, there's been a couple of different pronunciations told to us by the Yankees and different PR staff since we've gotten here to Tampa, so if anything doesn't sound quite right, or if I'm going back and forth, that's why. But anyway, after the Yankees acquired Angel, Brian Cashman noted that, you know, they had explored trading for him under the Rockies' previous regime, back when Bill Schmidt was running the front office there, circled back when Paul DePodesta took over this offseason, and, you know, this time they were able to work out a deal. So I thought that was kind of interesting that, you know, they had previous interest, and after a guy puts up a 7+ ERA, like, they go back to the well, and they're still intrigued. Why is that? I know a lot of fans are wondering. Well, he's got two really good secondary pitches. He's got a solid ground ball percentage. The fastball ranges around, you know, sits around 97 miles per hour. They do think that there are tools here with this kid that they can develop and mold into something that's better than what the Rockies saw over the last 2 years, right? Now, is that guaranteed to happen? Of course not. But one thing with Chavichi that the Yankees have working in their favor is that they don't necessarily have to get everything to click right away. He has a minor league option. He only has 1 year of service time, so he's way off from free agency. This can be a long-term project with, you know, a nice mold of clay serving as the foundation when you look at some of his metrics, some of the pitches that he has. Like, it's easy to see why they've been intrigued for some time now, despite some pretty awful surface numbers, which, by the way, came at Coors Field, which is no friend to a pitcher.
And not only is it no friend to the pitcher, the organization itself, the Rockies, haven't had a strong track record of pitching development. Part of that, the ballpark, part of that, not having a great reputation in their front office, the front office that oversaw player acquisitions and drafting and all that stuff over the course of the 2025 season is no longer in place. I imagine their on-field product and their lack of pitching development and player development played a role in that. So maybe that change of scenery helps as well. One thing I do want to note, Gary, because you talked about how this isn't a 2026-only project. Ahead of the 2024 season, they acquired Yerry De Los Santos. He did not pitch at the major league level. He came up for 25 appearances in 2025, where he was pretty effective for a low-cost acquisition. Brent Hedrick was acquired ahead of 2025. He did pitch a little bit in 2025, but wasn't really a mainstay in the bullpen. Now they have some pretty high hopes for him in 2026. So they've started doing this, acquire a young reliever with minor league options, stash him in AAA, give him a year to work on things, and then hope that that second, or maybe the case of Chavichi, third year ends up working out well. How does this play into the Yankee bullpen structure in terms of 2026? So do you think there's a chance that he can break camp with this team, knowing that there are some guys ahead of him and that this could be a multi-year project?
I think there is a chance. I think he probably has a better shot if some guys who I would consider ahead of him on the depth chart, you know, get hurt. You know, somebody like Jake Bird, you know, I would think he's ahead of Chivichi on the depth chart. Somebody like Cade Winquest, because he's a Rule 5 draft pick, if he pitches well, he's probably going to be favored for a roster spot so that the Yankees aren't losing that depth. They're not losing that arm. Bird, Hedrick, Chivichi, De Los Santos, I believe all these guys have options. So that makes them sort of flexible. It also might put them at a disadvantage compared to other pitchers who might not have an option. You know, maybe even if they pitch well, the Yankees want to maintain some depth, and one of those guys goes down to AAA in favor of somebody who doesn't have an option, or in favor of maybe an NRI who is pitching really well in camp, something like that. So it's a little early to tell. Like, we got to get into spring games. We got to see how guys are pitching in spring exhibition games. We got to see how guys are pitching to major league batters. You know, that's something I keep noting, is something that you got to keep an eye on and pay attention to in camp, how guys are being used, who they're being used against. But I would say he's definitely one of several in the mix. You know, we've talked about these lottery tickets that the Yankees have collected. He's one of them.
Yeah, and I think that there's a theme of the offseason, not just for the Yankees in terms of the way that numbers like ERA are valued for relievers. Teams seem to be evaluating relievers specifically a little bit differently, not really weighing the results as heavy as the underlying stuff or what they project for that pitcher moving forward. I know free agents are signed on future production, not past production anymore, but it does feel like for pitchers and relievers specifically, numbers like ERA just aren't focused on as much anymore. We saw Devin Williams sign a multi-year contract with the Mets after a year where his ERA was over 5, and I think a lot of teams in baseball were interested in Williams, if I'm not mistaken. So I do wonder if that's going to continue to be the growing trend for relievers, where you just see guys get valued primarily on stuff and strikeout rates. Any final thoughts on Chavichi and kind of where he's at with the roster relative to this year and where the organization views him moving forward?
No, just other than, you know, what you just said about how teams are valuing relievers is pretty accurate. It's, you know, ERA is not a good place to start when you're looking at value for relief pitchers. You look at a guy like Chavichi, and, you know, his slider and his changeup had whiff rates over 40% last year, like, or over 42% last year. Like, that's really attractive to the Yankees. The fact that he had a ground ball percentage of almost 50%, that's really attractive to the Yankees. The ERA, they can look at and say that's circumstantial. Part of that has to do with Coors Field, et cetera, et cetera. They're looking at what are the qualities and characteristics of his arsenal, and how can we either change those or alter the usage of those to fit what we want to do and what we think he can be. And he's a prime example of that.
Yeah, and as a person on the 40-man roster, he's not going to be listed as a non-roster invite. He's automatically invited to camp. We'll see him throughout spring training, barring injury, and we'll get to see kind of how he fits into this puzzle throughout the season, or maybe kind of stash him away and look at him as more of a 2027 addition to the roster. Staying on the theme of young pitchers who are going to be watched pretty closely this spring training, Elmer Rodriguez will get the start for the Yankees tomorrow in Sarasota against the Orioles. It is their Grapefruit League opener. Gary, why is this spring training important for someone like Elmer Rodriguez, given that we've basically cautioned fans, hey, don't look into these spring training stats, they're not that important? Why could that be a little bit different for someone like Rodriguez?
Well, it's kind of the same sense as the, you know, last spring was important for Cam Schlittler, right? Like, he got to be around veteran big league pitchers, starters like Carlos Rodon, Garrett Cole, other guys in the Yankees rotation, that helped him develop. Being around the Yankees major league pitching coaches helped him develop. On top of that, the Yankees gave Schlittler plenty of opportunities to face major league hitters so that they had a sense of where he was at. It wasn't by accident that he starts off, you know, the season last year with a very productive and involved and competitive spring training, and he you know, receives multiple promotions and is then pitching meaningful games in the majors by year's end. Like, that's not, like, this was the starting point. So maybe this is the starting point for Elmer Rodriguez. As I've said before, Matt Blake has said that Rodriguez is one of a few pitching prospects who are ahead of where Schlittler was at in his development at this point in time last season. So this is going to be his first chance to go out there and, you know, show it in a game scenario. I don't know what kind of lineup or what kind of hitters he's going to be facing tomorrow. I could tell you the Yankees are bringing a pretty limited roster of regulars to Sarasota. So such is the case this time of year, but that doesn't mean he won't face, you know, major league lineups or, you know, mostly major league lineups later on in the spring.
Yeah, and it's a good sense of getting a test for him. He's going to be playing in the World Baseball Classic, so I imagine getting him action early in the Grapefruit League is important to see him in these situations. Other guys going alongside him, Austin Wells, Jazz Chisholm, Jose Caballero, Amed Rosario, all also playing in the World Baseball Classic. I speculate that the fact that they're playing in the WBC is part of why they're traveling when veterans usually don't travel and go on the road to go play spring games. Usually they play most of them at home. But with Rodriguez starting, any final thoughts on him as he starts what is a pretty important spring training for him and a pretty important spring training for trying to see where he could fit into this rotation puzzle this season?
Boone's just mentioned a couple times that, you know, his earlier impressions are that he's a big fan of what he's seen. He's mentioned that he sees Rodriguez as a future, you know, talented big league starter. That doesn't mean he can't have a bullpen role per se, you know, early on. You know, we talked about this with Carlos Legrange last episode. And then you mentioned the WBC stuff and the particular names that are participating and traveling tomorrow. Those are all guys that have been at GMS since before position players had to report. That is because they are in the WBC. I imagine they are going to get in more games and ramp up at a little bit of a quicker pace because they are in the WBC. Boone's made note of wanting to do that with Judge. So, no, Judge isn't traveling tomorrow, but he's going to play in four or five of the Yankees' first nine spring training games because of WBC participation. So, kind of the same idea with those guys that you just mentioned.
Yeah, and one final note I had, because it came to mind and I lost that train of thought, then I regained it while you were talking about the competition and all that stuff. Legrange got to face some really good hitters in the live bullpen session. Schlittler last year got to face major league teams. Usually how the Yankees kind of show off a prospect and in what circumstances, their actions essentially speak very loudly about what they evaluate a player at and how they feel about that player. More so than their words, in my opinion. I think where they showcase them, how they utilize them, that has always been the greater tell of their feel or of their emotions and feeling about that player. I think they view Elmer pretty highly, and I'm excited to see kind of how he figures into this rotation mix at some point this year. Gary, any final thoughts on Mr. Rodriguez here?
No, but you mentioned, like, their actions speaking for, you know, maybe a little bit louder than their words, right? Like, 2 years ago, they were very comfortable naming Luis Gil the fifth starter when Gerrit Cole went down because he had faced, you know, multiple, mostly major league lineups in spring training. So, like, these are things to pay attention to. I know sometimes, like, fans will see so-and-so has, you know, eight home runs and, you know, he's, you know, a career AAA prospect and he really deserves to make the team. But in actuality, he's just been facing fellow AAA and AA players all spring, and that doesn't really tell you anything about what he can do in the major leagues. Like, the matchups are something that I try to keep an eye on this time of year.
Yeah, for sure. And again, with any prospect and any kind of promotion, we talked about this with Jason and Spencer Jones last week. They're not going to call Elmer up to make a spot start in San Francisco and then send him down. Like, if they call him up at any point, it's to probably give him a little bit of leeway, a little bit of a leash to kind of go out there and go do something, because they do put him in they do value him a good bit relative to other prospects in the organization. And I think he's rated pretty much universally as the number one pitching prospect in the organization, with Legrange basically right behind him in most of those rankings. But let's talk a little bit about Ryan McMahon, because Ryan McMahon, he's going to get some reps at shortstop. I don't think it's a big deal. It seems to just be an emergency option. Hey, Volpe's down right now. Cabrera is getting slow played in spring training. Doesn't feel like this massive deal, but Gary, what's your interpretation of the Ryan McMahon shortstop situation right now?
It's not a big deal. Calm down. don't fuss over it. Like, it's literally nothing. It is something that the Yankees are going to possibly test out for, you know, some practice reps, maybe a spring game or two, just to see if McMahon is capable, just in case all the other shortstops, you know, fall off a cliff or something. Like, this is for, you know, a super emergency situation, just to see if it's possible. The context being that, you know, obviously Anthony Volpe is starting the season on the injured list. Jose Caballero is expected to be the starting shortstop. Oswaldo Cabrera is positioned as the backup shortstop right now, but we'll get to him more in a little bit, but he's coming off the ankle injury, so the Yankees just want to be sure that if multiple X, Y, Z all go wrong, like, can they get by for an inning here, there, or a day here and there? I mean, it's nothing to freak out about. Ryan McMahon is the starting third baseman. I would just also throw in that, you know, they don't really trust or believe in Ahmed Rosario as a shortstop anymore. I know he played the position earlier in his career, but they've been reluctant to use him there. So that's all this is, just them trying to cover their bases in case more things go wrong.
Well, I'm glad we can put that to bed, because I think the far more interesting Ryan McMahon conversation we're going to have is about potential stance changes. Gary, you, by the time this is out for sure, like 100%, this article will be out because it's going to come out the day after we record. Can you talk to us a little bit about what's going on with Ryan McMahon and some of the tweaks he's making at the plate?
Yeah, so I talked to Ryan this morning in the clubhouse, and Aaron Boone had mentioned over the offseason, it might have even been in January when after the Chivichi trade, that he had narrowed his stance a little bit. Just quick passing mention of that. So I asked Ryan about it this morning, and he said that right after the season ended, he got on a Zoom call with James Rousen, Casey Dykes, Jake Hurst, the Yankees hitting coaches, and they basically told him, you know, your stance is really wide, your hips are not rotating the way that they should be. He absorbed the information, he then did a little bit of his own homework, he told me, and he reached the same conclusion that, you know, this just wasn't sustainable or productive for him. And by wide stance, I'm talking about the distance between his feet when he's getting set in the box. He had the fourth widest stance in baseball last year. Only Wilmer Flores, Brian Reynolds, and Josh Naylor had wider stances. So he's on the extreme end of the spectrum there. He obviously had a lot of swing and miss, a lot of strikeouts last year. WRC plus well below league average, right? So the Yankees are hoping that this puts him in a better position to touch down with his front foot, to load, to get his hips around. And you know, they keep saying that there's more to unlock in his bat. I'm a little bit skeptical. I'm not sure if that's true, but they seem very eager to try out this new stance, and they're hoping that that is going to kind of unlock more in Ryan McMahon.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to watch him too, because he's going to be in a platoon role, so he won't have to face the lefties that in his career have essentially made him a, I think it's like a 40% worse than league average hitter. He's more of a league average bat against righties. You know, the expected numbers last year indicated he should have been better, but the really bad zone contact rates, that is something that can tank your offensive production. Doesn't really matter how hard you hit the ball if you don't hit the ball, right? And you very rarely hear me say something like that. I'm usually the guy pushing against that kind of concept, but in the case of McMahon, extreme level whiff rates. I also find it interesting with Ryan McMahon that the Yankees have seen to do a decent job with like these athletic left-handed hitters. Jazz Chisholm, when he came over in 24, though, that was instantaneous. Grisham, over the span of about a year and a half, figured it out. So I do wonder, maybe there's something that they've cracked with left-handed hitters, or maybe this is typical spring training hype and he ends up putting up another 85 OPS plus season, and you know, it is what it is. I think I'm with you on leaning towards the latter, with he's going to be pretty much what he is in his career, but we'll see. I'm looking to be surprised. Any final thoughts, any notes on McMahon that you picked up after talking to him earlier today?
Yeah, I would just add, you know, building on that skepticism, you know, when the Yankees first acquired McMahon, they said similar comments about his untapped potential and all that, and obviously it did not pan out in the regular season last year. In the second half following the trade from the Rockies. On the flip side, I don't think they're looking for him to be, you know, an all-star level hitter. I think if they can get him to league average production, a 100 WRC plus, 20 plus homers, like, that's a huge improvement from what he was last year. It's a huge improvement from what they got out of the third base position last year. And you combine that with his elite defense, and that's a really good, valuable baseball player.
Yeah, to add on the point about the third base room for the Yankees, I've noted this so many times on the channel. The combination of Peraza, LeMahieu, Cabrera, and Vivas, and Reyes last year all had a negative war. I think it was negative 0.6 on Fangraphs, and I think they were 35% worse than league average offensively. I understand LeMahieu was not a third baseman, but he was their fourth infielder, and I kind of designate him, or I designate it as the fourth infield conundrum. Having McMahon, having a league average offensive outcome at third base with, I mean, just that alone would be a massive upgrade. Last year, Yankees were 18th in wins above replacement among players who played third base. Their 90 WRC plus was 15th, and that's including the post-deadline, getting Rosario reps, getting McMahon in there, and not having Peraza on the roster at that point. But, yeah, I just think third base, massive, massive black hole last year. Hopefully they just get passable production this year. I think that's a massive win for them over last year. Now, this is an interesting topic because I don't think I expected to be discussing this going into the week, but here we are. Tony Clark resigned from his position representing the Major League Baseball Players Association, that union. It was over an inappropriate relationship with his sister-in-law. That is the details we have. I don't think this conversation is going to delve into much of that, but more so the fact that Austin Wells, the Yankees player rep, did talk a little bit about what this could mean for the upcoming labor battle, how the player stance is on a potential lockout. Gary, what's the latest on that? What are the implications from this tumultuous week for the player union?
Yeah, so shortly after word of Tony Clark's resignation became public, Austin Wells told a few of us in the clubhouse that he would be handling Yankees player rep responsibilities with the union this year. The past 2 years, it had been Scott Efros, but he wasn't around, so Mark Leiter Jr. took care of those duties last season, and Wells served as a little bit of an alternate. And yeah, basically Wells is going to be the Yankees player rep. He will report to an 8-man executive subcommittee on the players union. That's those 8 players made up of in that group. So basically the way it kind of works on the union side is like it's a representative democracy, right? Like Wells talks to the Yankees as a whole, he then reports to the executive subcommittee, who hear from all the other player reps and their teams, and basically try to hammer out their positioning and their stances and their talking points, etc., etc. Obviously, that's a super important responsibility in a year where we're expecting a potential work stoppage after the season. So, thought it was interesting that Austin has that position now. And basically he was just talking about like, yeah, it's no secret that, you know, the baseball world is anticipating and preparing for a work stoppage. He said that is not something that players want, but also we're, quote, prepared to do what we have to do. Players are going to vehemently oppose a salary cap just like they always have. That's basically the reason the players union exists, right? And owners are going to push for one just like they always have, but have never gotten. So that story, you know, obviously Tony Clark's resignation and the scandalous nature around it, you know, he's also being investigated, you know, federally for, you know, the way he's handled union finances, but his resignation kind of put a greater spotlight on the bigger issue and the bigger story here, which is the looming labor battle.
Yeah, and I believe it's Bruce Mayer who will be replacing, who's unanimously voted, right, to replace Clark, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so that is going to be something to follow as we get closer to the offseason, and it's going to be a dark cloud over the 2026 season, whether people like it or not. That's just going to be looming over this because it feels like this labor battle will be more intense than the previous one. We have talked about this a little bit before, and I don't think this is the last time we'll talk about this. We will certainly continue to look at this situation, this story. Gary, any final thoughts on that?
It's not something I necessarily enjoy covering. Like, you know, who wants to write about the nitty gritty details of labor negotiations and battles and things like that, but it is an important story. It is going to be a story throughout the entire season. On a personal level, I'm certainly trying to make it a point to enjoy and appreciate this spring training, maybe more than I've tried to in the past. Not that I haven't, but just because I don't know if we're going to get a real spring training next season, right? Like, this could threaten a significant part of the baseball season in 2027. So it's something to keep up to date on. It's something to keep tabs on. I'm sure there's a wide split between fans of, you know, whose side they're on, whether they want a cap, don't want a cap, all these things. But it's one way or another, wherever you stand on it, it's going to be an issue that is discussed repetitively throughout the season. I'm going to do what I can when I can to do it through the perspective of the Yankees. So this is kind of the first stab at that with Austin talking the other day.
Yeah, and like again, it's very hostile. I think one of the moments that really opened my eyes to just how bad things were was the altercation between Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred, where Bryce Harper used expletives to essentially tell him, if you want to talk about a cap, you can get the F out of my locker room or my clubhouse. That is certainly not the sign of particularly strong relationships between the MLB owners and the Players Association. Yeah, we'll keep tabs on this. It's going to be a pretty ugly dilemma for the next couple of months, I guess the entire year, maybe into next year.
Yeah, so, and for those who don't know, the current collective bargaining agreement, it expires at 11:59 p.m. December 1st. So the expectation, or I guess the fear, whatever you want to call it at this point in time, is that once the clock strikes midnight, a lockout is going to be initiated. And yeah, well, as Aaron Boone said the other day, nobody wants to see that. We want to play baseball. I want to cover baseball. The people working in the stadiums and concessions, like, they want to do their jobs. And it's not an ideal situation, especially when, like, the game is so popular. There are so many great players, good ratings, all this. Obviously, some teams have some TV rights issues to figure out. But, yeah, it's I would be preparing for a lockout or a work stoppage right now, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think there's a greater chance that there's a greater chance that I become a big leaguer than a deal gets resolved before the deadline for the CBA to expire. Like, there's going to be a lockout. That's where we're at with this.
Maybe if they start looking for scabs, they can hit you up. No,
I will absolutely not participate as a scab. There's a 0% chance I will ever. Nah, that's not happening. That's a whole other conversation. I know that I could talk about that for hours. But we'll wrap our main topics by talking about Anthony Volpe a little bit, because he spoke to the media earlier this week about his rehab and recovery process after undergoing labrum surgery. Gary, what's the latest on Volpe and where his timeline could be at following that surgery?
Yeah, he said that April is definitely a possibility, but he didn't want to make any commitments as far as the timeline goes. He just started taking dry swings the other day on Monday, so that was the beginning of his hitting program. Next, he will graduate to T and then soft toss work. As for fielding, he's doing everything and has been doing everything other than diving. He said in a couple weeks, you know, he's going to start simulating that or practicing that. He wasn't exactly sure what that's going to look like or what it's going to entail, but basically he has to show that he can dive on his shoulder before he can get cleared for exhibition games and kind of take the next step in his rehab process. So I'm kind of curious myself as to, like, how they're going to do that in a safe manner. Does that mean just going out there and diving for ground ball after ground ball and line drive after line drive? Does that mean you put, like, a little gymnastics mat on there, like a crash pad for him? I don't know. Could be a fun, quirky story one day later this spring. But yeah, that is the latest on Anthony Volpe.
I want film of it. I just want to know what it looks like, or at least like a descriptive, like, this is what, like, I need to understand how it goes down, because practicing diving, the act that got him hurt in the first place, got to be an incredibly controlled environment. Like, I'm curious. That's all. I'm curious to see how that looks like. But it is interesting because he's, and I know we're going to get to him in a little bit, like he's not the only guy rehabbing off a major injury at that shortstop position, which ties into the McMahon stuff. Like, they've got two guys who are going to have to work back from pretty significant injuries during the 2026 season who play shortstop on the team, and the only guy who's really healthy and a capable option there is Caballero. So I'm very curious how that position plays out this year, because it seems like, and I know Max Schumann was acquired and he can play some shortstop, but he's like a fringe roster guy. This is going to be an interesting position, I think, to monitor throughout spring training. Like, can Cabrera play there? How quick is Volpe going to come back? Does this open up an opportunity for Schumann? I don't know what that means. Like, I personally don't know what Paul DeJong, and don't know if I want to speculate on Paul DeJong's roster spot. It'll be an interesting position to monitor. Any other interesting notes on Volpe and potentially what the shortstop position's looking like in the early parts of the year?
No, I know we had a mailbag question that asked about how Oswaldo Cabrera is doing, so maybe that's a good time to transition into that. The answer on Oswaldo is that, according to Boone, he's moving better and better every day. Oswaldo told me the other day that his ankle, which, you know, everybody remembers that gnarly fracture that he had last season in May, he said that he's a full go this spring. Boone said he's going to slow play getting him into games, maybe kind of hinting at him not necessarily being ready for the opening day roster, in which case, yeah, okay, who is that backup shortstop? We know it's probably not Rosario. You mentioned Max Schumann, you mentioned Paul DeJong. Boone talked about those guys briefly yesterday, basically saying, like, Schumann is very athletic, a great defender, can play all over the infield, so maybe he is an option for that utility spot. DeJong has also played all over the infield, not necessarily the strongest defender, particularly at shortstop, but he's played the position recently. He can play elsewhere. He's a right-handed hitter, so maybe he plays himself into a spot as an NRI. I'm not sure. I think it depends a lot on where Cabrera is at come the end of spring training, how built up he is, how mobile he is coming off the ankle injury. He does have a minor league option, so, you know, the Yankees can send him down if there's any rust or anything like that. But, yeah, those are basically the names that are options at shortstop right now, or to back up at the position anyway.
Yeah, and just to sneak this in here real quick, it was Dan Mills 3273 with the question on how Oswaldo's doing, so I want to shout you out. Thank you for the question. And, yeah, I think this is all, again, it ties to Volpe because how quickly he returns dictates how long that roster, how long that question needs to be answered for, because once he comes back, okay, Caballero's your backup shortstop. Assuming he doesn't have a traumatic injury occur between now and then, he should be a good to go. Nothing limiting him from playing the position. He's a traditionally pretty strong defender there. And it puts less pressure on the Cabreras and Schumanns of the world to have to get everyday reps there, where they're not really that strong of a defensive option. I'm sure Boone doesn't want to have to lean on that too much. And I think that's kind of why you have the McMahon shortstop story in the first place, just because it's, hey, try and figure out who can and who can't play the position right now. But any other thoughts on Cabrera before we get to some of our other mailbag questions here?
No, that's all I got on him, other than I know he spent the offseason down here in the Tampa area and other parts of Florida. He said, fortunately, his family, he's Venezuelan, you know, stayed out of harm's way earlier this offseason when, you know, there's a lot of chaos down there. So seems to be all good in all aspects of Oswaldo's life.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, God bless on that. Like, that's good to hear that his family wasn't affected there. That's its own situation. Again, I could spend hours on that, but different conversation, different day. Let's get into some of the other mailbag questions here. Again, thanking Dan Mills for the question. Let's start with one from Festive Slurpee, and it says, is the Yankees offseason truly over? Is a deal for a reliever coming? Gary, are we looking at the 26 guys who are going to be here? Are they already in Tampa?
Well, Brian Cashman always says that it's not pencils down until the trade deadline, right? So theoretically, that is true. In all seriousness, you know, you very often see guys come, you know, join a team in the middle of spring training. You have waiver wire pickups. You make trades at the end of camp when there's cuts. So they could certainly bring in another reliever. They could bring in a bench piece, you know, who hits from the right side and plays the outfield, perhaps. I wouldn't assume that they're done, but, you know, you never know. They've said they really like the group that they have here, but that doesn't mean they don't add a supplementary piece.
Yeah, and they've made some late spring, like right around the opening day start deals before. I'm not going to count the Donaldson deal in there. There was a lockout. I think that's a little bit, that's just like a different whole ordeal. I will lump the Trevino trade in there. I know that's the same offseason, but that was, I think, right in between spring training ending and the season opening up in Yankee Stadium against the Red Sox.
Same with John Birdie as well, right?
Yes, yes.
Right before opening day. So, like, these things happen.
And sometimes nothing happens. Sometimes, yeah, it is the group. Sometimes it's just that, I mean, well, it's a matter of matching up on value. This time of year, it's also not necessarily the easiest to make trades because a lot of teams are like, all right, this is who we got, and we don't really want to shake things up too much. You have to make two to tango there. The free agent market's all but dried up. I saw a tweet that I think encapsulates it well. Once the projected war of free agents on Fangraphs is lower than the Colorado Rockies, the market's dead. That's where we're at. The market is dead there.
That's a good way of putting it. I like that.
Yeah, I have to find the person who tweeted it because that's a great tweet.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to necessarily spend any money on remaining free agents. I'm not even sure who's still out there at this point. I think Randall Grichuk is somebody that is still available who, you know, was of interest to them at one point this offseason. So I'm not expecting any, you know, anybody that's going to cost upwards of, you know, $2 million or anything like that just yet. Give it some time. See how other rosters shake out across the league. See how the Yankees roster shakes out, who stays healthy, etc. I'm sure there'll be some new faces brought into camp at some point. How likely they are to impact the big league roster, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, you get like your Rafael Monteros consigned from now until, I mean, some of them will be added to the roster. I will say, opportunities do matter. So, like, if the Yankees don't end up with, I don't know, I wrote about Michael Kopech this morning as like a fun option. If they don't end up with him, it's not even just a money thing. It could be a situation of Kopech feels like it's more likely he can make a bad team's bullpen than the Yankees bullpen. Like, these things do matter to guys who are signing this time of year in the most part. Like, opportunities matter. If you're not going to get a clear pathway to play every day or a clear pathway to make the 26-man roster, that's going to affect decisions. But yeah, any final thoughts on what they could do before this spring training wraps up and they head into the regular season?
No, I think we've touched on it.
Yeah, so let's move on to a question from Hammy26 underscore. And he talks about who gets the last bench spot between Dominguez, Cabrera, or others. He did mention Nick Torres, but I don't believe Nick Torres is in camp, right? Like, is he here?
I'm getting a lot of questions about Nick Torres, and no, he is not in camp. I'm not sure why he's not in camp. You know, he is in the organization. I'll be honest, that's not something I have looked into. You know, this is a guy that was a career minor leaguer before being the Mexican League MVP. I think if the Yankees wanted him in camp, he'd be in camp. They probably see him as more of a developmental type piece, but Nick Torres is not here.
Yeah, so I imagine this fourth spot is going to come down to, like, what they need, and I feel like what they need is somebody who can play shortstop that isn't named Jose Caballero and probably isn't named Ryan McMahon either. So is it fair to say, like, Cabrera might have the inside track? I know you also talked about Dominguez. Like, Brian Cashman said pretty much, hey, we'd prefer him to get everyday reps. That's not coming in the big leagues unless somebody goes down, so it wouldn't be Dominguez as a bench spot guy. So is it safe to say it seems to be somebody who can play shortstop, or do you think there's somebody else on the radar who could snag that final bench spot?
I think it would have to be somebody who's capable of playing shortstop, right? Like, Cashman has telegraphed that if there's not an injury to the Yankees outfield or Giancarlo Stanton, it's best for Jason Dominguez to be playing every day. That would be at AAA. That opportunity doesn't exist on the Yankees roster as things stand. So on top of that, you know, Dominguez is not a great defensive fourth outfielder to be bringing off your bench. He can only play left field, and he doesn't play it particularly well. And obviously, he does not play shortstop. Cabrera, on the other hand, does play shortstop. He can also play the corner outfield positions. Like I said earlier, not quite sure where he's going to be at the end of camp. I think by letting us know that he was going to be slow played getting into games, Boone was, you know, basically opening up the possibility that, hey, he might not be ready for opening day. Again, too early in spring to know that for sure. The games have not begun yet. So we'll see with Oswaldo. You know, I would think that if he is mobile and he does look good and he's moving around well in game action, I would think he is the favorite for that bench spot. If not, they probably need to look at somebody like DeJong or Schumann.
Yeah, and I think the obscurity of that bench spot right now is why you can, I think, leave the door a little bit open to the idea that they might bring in somebody else. It just wouldn't be like a big piece, just somebody who might be able to play some shortstop, maybe someone who can play some outfield. I don't know. But yeah, it seems that final bench spot, Dominguez doesn't feel like the guy is going to grab a bench spot. It would be a starting job. And yeah, Nick Torres isn't here. So that covers two of the three names there. Process of elimination as well. The Cabrera, you are the prohibitive favorite. Let's move on to the final question here from Andrew Nevins. And thank you again to everybody who submitted questions. He asks, who are some breakout candidates on both sides of the ball to watch in 2026? So I guess one name for each side of the ball, because or unless you want to name multiple.
Well, I guess whoever ends up in the bullpen, right? Like, that could be a candidate for breakout, technically, right? There's so many guys competing for what looks like two spots right now that you don't really know who it's going to be. But I could certainly see a Jake Bird or a Brent Hedrick or even Cade Winfquist, right? The Rule 5 draft pick. Like, I could see any of those guys having a quote-unquote breakout season if they make the roster, but there's several other potential breakout candidates, you know, maybe standing in their way. So those are some names that come to mind. Offensively, I could see Wells, you know, having a breakout season. I know the Yankees certainly expect more from him offensively. Aaron Boone's been very, very candid about that. Wells has been open in saying that he understands that candor. I certainly think he has the potential to be a better hitter than what we saw last year. So he's one guy I'm keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I think Wells is a good pull because, again, I mean, we saw such high highs in 24 and then 25 just felt like it wasn't a bad season because he was a good defensive catcher, but it wasn't the year I imagine the Yankees were hoping for. So I think he's somebody to keep tabs on the offensive side. I'm going to go with Caballero for me, just because I think, I don't know, I think that that shortstop job could be a little more open as the year goes on if Volpe doesn't play up to snuff. And I've liked Caballero for years for some reason. I don't know why. Like, I liked him when he was a Mariner. I was upset when the Rays traded for him because I thought they were going to turn him into their everyday shortstop, and that didn't really pan out that way. So I'm going to continue to peg on a breakout until I'm wrong, and I've been wrong for 3 years now, so make it four, man. Let's see if we push it to four. On the pitching side, I've been pretty vocal about Winquest, but I'm going to go with an obscure name for the bullpen. I think Yerry De Los Santos is a little underrated. I think, like, he was a competitive big league reliever last year, and they kind of don't have a lot of surefire competitive big leaguers in their bullpen. Why not? Big Yerry, scary Yerry. Let's get it rolling, man.
Of those lottery tickets that they've got competing for those last two spots, I kind of see him as last among the guys with major league experience. But you're right, he did pitch well in the big leagues at times last year. He does have a, you know, arsenal that the Yankees like, you know, especially with that sinker. I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, pitching a handful of games in the majors again this season, whether that's the opening day bullpen or not. But yeah, no, he showed he could pitch in the big leagues last year.
Yeah, scary Yerry, man. I almost pulled myself to say Max Schumann will be interesting enough to follow this year, but then I realized I was trying to break down Max Schumann data, and I was like, I should maybe, again, go outside, breathe some air, go do something else with my life. Instead, Caballero just feels like a little less of a crazy pick. But yeah, I don't think there's as much like intrigue with breakouts on the offensive side this year. It's kind of like all the guys who were interesting breakouts last year either broke out or aren't on the team, and yeah, so I don't think there's a lot of intrigue there. I think there's more intrigue on the pitching side. Any final thoughts on potential breakout guys for you, Gary?
Ryan Weathers is another guy that I would lump in that category. Yeah, I know, yeah. He's probably been considered a breakout guy for several years now, which is never what you want at a certain point. But I'm curious to see what the Yankees do with him.
The guy I've like the hope cast, so like the optimistic, it could go this way, but it. This is optimistic for sure. Jesus Luzardo spent so much time as a fantasy breakout when I actually cared about fantasy baseball for a little bit. And then he just broke out and it happened. It took 4 years of being in the big leagues for it to happen. And then he proceeded to have some injury issues in 24 that stopped him from getting that much in return from the Phillies. And then he had a really good year with the Phillies, although the ERA suggests he was more mediocre. His ERA was fake. He's really good. I'm hoping that maybe Weathers has that this year. We'll see. I think that's health is a big thing there. Like, he could just not pitch enough for him to even break out. And that's kind of been the case for most of his career. So we'll see on him. He came up really early. I think he debuted in 2020 as a 20-year-old in the postseason. So, yeah, we'll see. Gary, any final thoughts before we wrap things up here?
Sometimes young pitchers need time. They're not all Paul Skenes, you know? Sometimes you got to be a little patient or even a lot of patient with a young pitcher.
Yeah, and look, I'll not to suggest that this is going to happen, but, like, if you want to go to a classic example, Randy Johnson broke out in his late 20s, so, and he's probably the greatest. No, Pedro Martinez is my GOAT pick for pitchers, but he's up there in that conversation. Randy Johnson's not the wrong pick for that. Obviously, Brian Weathers is not Randy Johnson, but there are some extreme outliers. There are some extreme examples you could go for there. Even guys on the Yankees themselves, like Rodon was a late career breakout. It wasn't until he got non-tendered and re-signed by the White Sox that he became an all-star caliber pitcher. So we'll see with Weathers. Sometimes these guys don't pan out. Sometimes these guys become future Hall of Famers. There's a wide range of outcomes there. And I'm curious to see. Again, I'm curious to see the pitchers. Spring training is always the time to watch pitchers. Fun fact, the Yankees have as many guys drafted by the Padres in their rotation as they do drafted by the Yankees. Weird note, just Weathers and Freed. Yeah, there we go. Anything else you want to add, Gary?
No. Looking forward to getting some games started here. Got a couple more days left to report down here in Tampa before my first leg of spring training is over. And again, really appreciative of everybody that's listened and tuned in so far. I hope you're all coming back. And we're certainly looking forward to some more episodes and keeping this going throughout the season.
Yeah, and if this is your first time listening to the Bronx Beat, we really appreciate it. We record twice a week, and I think there's a lot of fun stuff for you to stick around and watch. If you've continued watching, this is not your first time, first rodeo, listen to us talk here. We really appreciate your continued support. You can like and subscribe on the YouTube to show support if you're watching this video. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, you can leave a 5-star rating. You can also leave a review and download to help support the podcast there. Links to the articles that Gary referenced in this video will be in the description, alongside a link to his work on the New York Daily News. You guys can also check out our social media pages on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and of course this YouTube page. Our Twitter accounts are below me. They're just, I can't see them, but you will be able to see them. And yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next one. Have a great rest of your day. Peace out, everybody.
Perfect.